Hello and welcome to Commentary on Fire. Joining me today we have Ken.
Ken is here, good morning.
And a very special guest, Mike Leader.
Good evening.
Yep. So this morning Ken and Mike will be doing an audio commentary for Enter the Fat Dragon whilst Stuart divulges in Storm Warriors.
I have just
opened the Kling film.
Stuart, save yourself now.
Don't you be saying those words to me, man.
No, trust me. Save yourself now.
I was lost to begin with, Mike.
Warriors, it's like Spider-Man 3. Watch the trailer and imagine how good it's going to be. Do not go any further.
Do go further, but after this recording, Stuart.
Yeah, I'm now thoroughly depressed for this commentary. I'm going to be moping and maybe crying a little. So, okay, we're handing it over to Ken for the countdown.
Exactly. Just to give you a brief idea, we're watching Enter the Fat Dragon, and we're watching it via this Crash Cinema DVD. Some of you might have a bootleg of it that is not Crash. So we're going to start talking at the start of the red production logo. So if you want to sync up... You want to sync up that way, you can, but it's a better way to sync up the following way. Start the movie at the start of the Pagoda logo, which is actually the Crash logo, and wait a few seconds before we start talking. You'll have to wait a few seconds before we start talking, and at the Red Production logo, the commentary starts. So it's best for you lot to pause at around about the 7 second mark, and I'll do a countdown, which will end with the word play, and play is the cue for you to play. Is that clear, gentlemen?
Yes.
Crystal.
Good. We're good. So, the countdown will start 3, 2, 1, play.
Fuck, I better turn up my volume. There we go.
Crash logo.
Yeah, so I'm guessing this is just an American DVD company because...
But this is not an American DVD company. the Fong Ming Motion Picture Company. And Enter the Fat Dragon. I'm sure Mike Leader has plenty of background on it, but I couldn't find much. But what you can sort of gather is that someone wanted to take a chance to honor the legacy and legend of Bruce Lee. Sam had worked with Bruce Lee. He sort of respected him, obviously drew a huge influence from him. So in this movie-making climate that had Bruce Bloitation going full speed ahead, you know, Bruce in Shaolin Kung Fu, Bruce Lee the Invincible, Bruce Lai in New Guinea and Game of Death, which Game of Death was perhaps the worst offender, I'm sure someone in this production, Sammo maybe primarily, wanted to pay loving respect and tribute to the man rather than fully exploiting and making a crazy time. Although I have to say, making a crazy time is not necessarily a bad thing. And if you watch License of Steel, License to Steel, the Billy Chan movie, there's actually a fight between Mina and Agnes that turns into a fight featuring Bruce and Kadeem, Karim from Game of Death. So, and Skinner Tiger Fatty Dragon has references.
Basically, every Sammo Hung movie has a Bruce Lee reference in there. Bruce is about the one person Sammo always speaks the most highly of, and if you go through every movie, you'll find there's at least one reference.
Have you ever spoken to Sammo about this? Has he ever spoken about who took initiative to go ahead with this production? Does anyone know?
I think it was Sammo himself. I mean, it was just as Sammo had started his directing career, and Sammo was already known for his connection with Bruce Lee and his impersonations. And I think he was just, as we said, it's a playful homage. It's making fun while at the same time paying respect to Bruce Lee. Whereas I agree, Game of Death and The Legend of Bruce Lee TV series, in my opinion, are the two worst cases of Bruce exploitation, and they're both the official versions.
Which is a great shame. Supported by the Bruce Lee Foundation, I read too. The latter one, which is not the best thing to have. having said that, me and Stu have discussed on the podcast several times that you have a sort of an unashamed love for Game of Death because it's so whacked out. It's so the decisions are so poor. You know, if you go past the fact that they shot footage at Bruce's funeral, then there is a dumb movie in there that is kind of fun to watch. Wouldn't you agree, Stu? I mean, you have loving memories of Game of Death.
Yes, I was innocent enough not to notice half the camera tricks they pulled off, like people wearing cardboard masks.
You used to sing, "Will this be the song I'll be singing tomorrow?" You were in love with Colleen Kemp's song. Yeah.
Who wouldn't be?
If I knew who the fuck she was.
Ah, the leading lady.
The woman!
Oh! I thought it was the police chief. Come on. Right.
So, we're witnessing a martial arts movie convention right now. The red background fight demonstrations. And it could either be very much connected to the story, showcasing upcoming fighters. It could very much just be a demo that has nothing to do with anything at all. Or it could be, in the case of Enter the Fat Dragon, to set up an atmos of the sort of the best of Bruce Lee, the mannerisms of Bruce Lee, featuring a lot of our favorite stuntman, supporting actors, leading guys in some movies' cases.
I mean, exactly. You'll see Yuen Biu, Mars, Meng Hoi, Chin Yut Sen, Lung Kong, everyone turning up in this against the red backdrop. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I miss these from the old films. That used to always be one of the greatest moments. You know, you'd sometimes have a movie with such a fantastic red background intro, and then the movie would never live up to it.
Here we go, Chung Fa. The great Chung Fa.
Thanks for coming along.
I bet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's, you know, I think Kidnap in Rome, if anyone saw that, was made like a year or two earlier than this, maybe 3 years earlier than this. And Meng Hoi is a fucking kid in that movie. It's like he looks like he's 12 years old in Kidnap in Rome.
He's 12 years old nowadays, actually. There's him, you, of course. Yeah.
Last time I think I saw Sammo and Meng Hoi work together was on the Osaka wrestling restaurant.
Oh yeah, you saw that, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It's good?
Not too bad.
Which also featured, of course, Timmy Hung, Sammo's eldest son.
Right, yes.
Who was in SBL and recently ICAC, I Corrupt All Cops, which was a shit movie, but Timmy was in that as well. Action director Sammo Hung, of course. I don't know if it did all of the action on his own. If this was, you know,
Hakon was one of the assistant action directors for this movie.
Yeah, I was about to say, I mean, it's a big undertaking. Lead director, action director, you can really, you know, a small movie probably shot in a very, very limited amount of time.
Wow.
That hurts to this day.
But I guess an early question. An early eye is a great gag, and it's a running theme, this, with Sammo getting lost in his Bruce Lee infatuation. He literally gets lost out of his mind, goes into a different shell, and it's a running theme that I very much enjoy. He's a fanatic.
Now, come on, this is an upcoming joke that is worthy of Wong Jing at his best. Yeah.
You gotta have the pee and knob gag.
It's the
somewhere
face as well.
How can you piss on the street, indeed? And on that note, oh, there we go. I think it's very apt to ask this question based on this scene. So what makes you guys appreciate Sammo, his action and contribution to Hong Kong cinema, you know, on a personal level? What do you think of when you think of Sammo? So, Stu?
I always had to start with Stu. Go on, the first thing I always think of when it comes to Sammo is those Three Brothers movies, or else, well, it is his old Kung Fu films.
Yeah.
Like,
You also mentioned Warriors 2 as one of your favourites.
That is my main classics, which, you know, when I've got a main classic movie is when it's on the DVD rack in the living room, when I'm proud to show that movie off.
Yeah, exactly.
And you also have Storm Riders there, man. It's
Where were you in my fucking living room? Right. But aye, come on. He's done other great films like Millionaire's Express. I know that's like one big clusterfuck of Hong Kong stars, but still.
But it's a great movie,
entertaining. And it's like a drinking game for famous faces.
The weirdest thing with that movie is there's just so many different versions of it. I mean, there's, I remember seeing it at the cinema in England, and you know, I think I saw it three times at the cinema, and each time there was a slightly different edit. You know, some of them had more action, some had more comedy, but I mean, they're just classic movies. It's,
I started off with one of the old VCDs, and then of course when the Hong Kong Legend finally came along, picked up that.
And it was different again. we witnessed a scene on the bus. I think it was Sammo. It's coming up here. He has the bananas right around his crotch area, and it's a knob gag, not in a very good disguise. It's a scene, that small scene that was cut from the English dub that I watched. So they there's a lot of broad stuff in it, but that one in particular got cut. And I think it. As well as when the bus driver, here we go, when the bus driver listens to the horse race.
Yeah.
But it's not the typically, let's say, Hong Kong-esque just knob gag.
Sorry to interrupt, but this is a famous old face, isn't it?
Indeed. Was this Sai Kwa Pao? Or old, what's his name in the Wong Fei Hung?
Stuttering So.
Yeah, Stuttering So, I guess. And played that character pretty much all his life in every movie I've seen. There's been a variation of that character, even though he's been in like Category 3 exploitation. And so it's been like...
I would really like to know what that woman was actually thinking she was holding on to.
Yeah, I've always been confused by that. It's as if there's part of a joke missing, because she's got a grip around a bunch of bananas and has no question of that's out of the ordinary, yeah.
Well, speaking of missing, I think if you watch the movie quite carefully, there seems to be the odd stuff missing from this very worn print. So it might be that it's stuff that just got cut from the film for whatever reason, or disappeared from it for whatever reason. So you never know; it might have been in there.
Nah, I think she was the pervert, not Samuel. She just gets the buses, cups a couple guys.
I noticed.
Hong Kong, you know the right place, the women to meet.
They're on the buses, man.
Public transport has more fun in Hong Kong than most places. Yeah.
One thing I noticed when watching this is that it's it sort of runs along the same path as the plot of two other movies, quite known movies, and to Way of the Dragon and Rumble in the Bronx. Yeah. Which is not the worst thing here, but and it's not that I'm saying that one or the other stole from from Bruce Lee or Sammo, but it's worth noting out, pointing out that we there's a familiarity to this plot, like a familiarity could turn up in Triad movies or cop movies, of course. So you know, it's nothing to feel bad about or angry about. So you, Mike, in terms of your impressions of Sammo's contribution to Hong Kong cinema, what's your general thought on...
I've always thought he's just one of the most consistent directors, fight choreographers, very underrated actor, also very underrated as a producer. I mean, he's helped bring so many people into the industry on so many different levels, jump-started people's careers. And he's just one of the nicest guys you could ever meet, and somebody that I've had the opportunity to get to know over the years and work with several times, and he's still great fun. I mean, I worked with him last week, and it's just great. You always have a good time when you're working with Sammo. And there's the lovely Meg Lamb, who still looks pretty much the same, is best known now as an ATV actress, so yeah. It's real good, and Sammo had that exact haircut last week for the shoot.
I saw her in, and it's proper for me to make this reference to a movie that no one saw, actually, but the prison drama, The First Time is the Last Time, with Andy Lau.
And I know that movie. I've seen that movie. Some people haven't seen it.
One, two, hooray. She was nominated for that movie, I believe.
Carrie Young in it as well, yeah.
Yeah, and Andy Lau was in a relatively small role, actually, but it's a good prison drama, very violent, and was nominated for a few awards, actually. and came out on a DVD from AR a few years ago, so you have a remastered print in circulation now.
Very good movie, very underrated. Susan Marr, Carrie Ung, Meg Lamb. A very good, very different women in prison movie than you'd expect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Fung Fung, the
not
guy with the...
Scenes. Not as many shower scenes as we'd all hope, but...
The guy for Fung Fung on screen now with the contorted face, actually the father of Fung Hakon, mm-hmm. who's
and,
in this movie.
And also the father of Fung Bobo, the child actress and singer.
Yeah, exactly. Petrina Fung Bobo. Also, modern audiences might have seen her in C'est la vie, mon chéri, the Derek Yee film, among other things. But he was quite apparent. His face is like that because he had a accident with a training machine at one point in his life.
It got worse later on because he had a stroke as well.
Right.
And I mean, later on it got very bad. But I mean, it sounds horrible. But in Hong Kong, when I first arrived, I mean, there's a lot of people with like sometimes scars and things that it's how would I say it without sounding horrible, but sometimes this, when I first came to Hong Kong, there were like physical deformities or accidents that perhaps in the West would have been taken care of. In Asia, in Hong Kong, people seem to leave them be, like wouldn't try and have corrective surgery or anything. It's always been one of the strangest things here. I mean, you'll sometimes have people like with very large gouts, like swellings on their neck or something, and it's
mole hair as well.
Hong Kong's so small. It's a lot more common than you see in the West, And then, so it's strange, but he was a very nice guy. I met him once or twice. Fung Hakon always plays a villain, but is actually quite nice once he gets past the villainous persona. And Fung Bobo is just lovely. She's kind of like becoming like an auntie in the industry, and is just very, very good. Incredible singer, and still a very good actress. So
It's again, speaking of the Bruce Lee infatuation, I like that when he shows the picture. Look at this. Isn't it great? Go away. Get it out of my sight. I guess one has to talk a little bit about Bruceploitation, even though this isn't Bruceploitation. This is way above any bad or even fun Bruceploitation. So, again, what's your general thought if it's on that genre, if you will? Is it shameful, awful, shamefully great, charming, insane, etc.? I mean, we talked about Game of Death, but it's a wide genre.
I veer between some of it is an incredible guilty pleasure, some of it is just terrible exploitation, and some of it is just great entertainment once they just stopped. Once they dropped all the let's try and do every movie as a true story from Bruce Lee's life. Once Bruce Lee and Bruce Lee and Dragon Lee started doing movies where it was just accepted that they were a character who looked like Bruce Lee, instead of every movie being, I am Bruce Lee's student, please continue my life. There's some classic movies. I mean, they're great fun, and I mean, it was just the industry at that time was willing to accept it. I mean, you look at all the knockoff movies now, like, there's a company called The Asylum in America, which makes all the movies like Terminators, The Day the Earth Stopped. it's similar in some ways. There's always a market. Kenneth and me are both fans of Joseph Lai, and I mean, Joseph did plenty of Bruceploitation, Ninjasploitation, Kickboxersploitation, all kinds of it,
And the Game of Death, again, a movie that I quite like and still quite like. It was the biggest Bruceploitation movie ever because it has so much backing behind it, and it turned out to be sort of the worst. It was the worst offender.
Oh, exactly. I remember finally watching an uncut print of Game of Death and just walking away even more disappointed because I heard so much about it. When I first started watching Hong Kong movies, I'd watched Enter the Game of Death and all this, and I wasn't really 100% sure what was going on. But I'd heard so much, and when I finally got to see an uncut Game of Death, it was still crap. I mean, I'm honest that my appreciation for Bruce Lee didn't really come about until I came to Hong Kong, because the first Bruce Lee movies I saw were the really badly cut English versions, Fist of Fury with no nunchucks, Way of the Dragon, the entire alleyway scene being missing, so I thought it was some kind of joke. You know, Bruce Lee steps out into the alleyway with the guys and immediately steps back in.
It's a Monty Python gag, that, you know, scene.
Yeah,
I'll use that problem now.
Yeah. And then it was actually Sammo who made me sit down and watch the Bruce Lee movies and get a better appreciation of them. So, I mean, Sammo isn't just playing the love of Bruce Lee for a movie. Sammo really does have the highest respect for Bruce Lee. I mean, to this day, I mean, he still speaks very highly of him, about working with him, about how Bruce changed the industry for everyone. And I think it's just, you know, Bruce Lee does hold up. I mean, the problem is, you know, for the 1970s, those films were an incredible impact. Of course, if you've seen the Jackie Chan movies or the Jet Li movies or the New Wave stuff, it's less of an impact in some ways if you see them for the first time now, but they held up. It's, you know, they're still a good film.
We got to focus on one aspect here again, the running theme of Sammo launching himself into Bruce mode, which is the most enjoyable, you know, the transformation. No fucking CGI transformation into, you know, that look, touching his nose, pointing. You know, and the thing is, Sammo's character, as I said, I don't think he's at all times properly balanced. I think he might get himself into more trouble than he ever thinks. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, I mean, he's meant to be it's very Way of the Dragon. He's the young village boy who suddenly traveled into the big city. You know, he's the honorable guy and suddenly realizing he's in a world without honor. You know, not everything is as black and white as it seems, that there's more to it. Like, there, the police arresting him, you know.
And now he snaps out of it, you know, and becomes that counter bumpkin. And I mean, kind of
this especially, but nobody wanting to be the witness.
You can't be a witness. You want to die?
That's the place to be living, yeah.
But I actually love that. It's idol infatuation, that your private idol infatuation. And he takes it outside of his private little space He never really gets into danger, obviously. He doesn't get killed or anything, but he doesn't realize the risks at all times. You know, the risks with the law, as we saw in the previous scene there. He doesn't think of that at all, although he was standing up to people who were breaking the law. I was thinking, Stu, did you ever watch, like, more Game of Bruce Boitation outside of that Game of Death and Dragon Lives Again?
Not really. I just really didn't have an interest in it, because a lot of it, like, as you're saying, some of it's guilty pleasure, some of it's terribly exploited.
Okay, Stuart, Challenge of the Tiger, naked, topless tennis matches. Bruce Lee fighting a bull. You need to watch it.
That's just like me saying kettle, table, video game. Complete three random things that shouldn't be put together. What?
They should!
Naked... tennis, what? Right.
You know, the things that you mentioned, they can put that in like a Japanese tokusatsu TV series, you know, the kettles and
they
the tables.
Monsters, yes.
Yeah. But the Dragon Lives Again, it must have made an impression on you as one of these, you know, it's not run-of-the-mill type stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those moments in life when I'm sitting there with my eight-month-year-old nephew and he turns and looks at me and wonders, what the fuck are we watching?
And he's only 2 years old.
No, he's only 8 months at that point.
Yeah, but that's probably the best time to introduce him to the concept of Bruceploitation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, with like child-friendly characters like Popeye showing up.
Yeah.
Exactly. There you go.
Clint Eastwood and One-Armed Swordsman and Satoichi and Emmanuel and mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
But I was going to say, I could blame it on the availability, but I do think that Vengeance Videos did churn out a lot of the Bruceploitation flicks.
Yeah, they've always been around, I mean, even in full screen versions and dubbed. And by the way, dubbed for Bruceploitation is probably the greatest, English dubbed, is probably the greatest language to watch some of these Bruceploitation movies in, because it's, you know, it's completely silly, and you want to have
I love
a silly exaggeration.
Right here. Where he thinks he's Bruce Lee, but no, Piggy.
I mean, the funny thing is, this to this day, this is still how they sell sunglasses in the market. They'll have the picture of Andy Lau or Jalian Fat from A Better Tomorrow. And you know, they still play up this exact thing. If you go to Temple Street, all the, you know, the sunglasses shops, you know, are playing the same thing with the posters and the pictures. Yeah.
This great actor Fung King Man, he turns up again in small roles everywhere. I'm not sure he's dead yet, to be honest, because he seemed to be old like this for about 30 years.
And wearing the same fucking gap as well. I'm pretty sure he just walks off one movie set and onto another and picks up the same role.
I mean, that I'd agree. I mean, even in Rosa, he's wearing the same outfit
for ages. So, I'm hard-pressed to say which movies Fung King Man appeared in, because he probably has 800 movies on his resume and he's like 1 minute in each of those movies playing like a elder triad or elder whatever, elder salesman.
Talking of triads, here's a motley looking crew of stuntmen come to cause trouble. Yeah. Including you mugging for the camera there, turning to make sure he gets a good shot.
He didn't get any extra money for that, I'm willing to bet.
Probably got
Normally in Hong Kong, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the big difference between Western filmmaking and Asian filmmaking, like in the West, often people, if you're on camera as a performer, you get an adjustment instead of you just being a stuntman. In Asia, that's why there's so many people from crew who are working on films as actors. It's just, you're here. You will play that character. You do. Yeah. I think one of the joys on Fearless was they got to have me grow my hair and look stupid, and then have me work as, you know, various departments on the crew, as well as playing the referee. It was just a case of, Mike's here, we can use him for everything. So yeah.
Punching bag.
I did get to double Anthony DeLongis' hand at one point. So yeah, that's one of those joys when people complain that they will never be doubled. At times, everyone is doubled just for specific reasons, such as, oh, he's not here today. Yeah.
but back in the old days, I guess that was more the case, where with people like jumping between movies, five or four movies, all in the same day. You know, Andy Lau, Chiang Fat. Oh, that's Mang Hoi again.
Oh no, I mean, there's a legend regarding Eddie Koh, Koh Hung. I mean, he once claims he didn't go home for 3 weeks because he was working for films. He would just sleep in vans between locations, etc. I mean, and that's the thing. For a while, the industry was that flat out that you could get away with that. You could do that, yeah.
Billy Chan in the blue shirt.
That's Billy Chan himself, Channel 9, yeah.
Great director. Actually, he may have made like 10 movies and only two of them were good, but No Compromise and Crazy Safari are damn outright Hong Kong classics.
Oh, come on, man. License to Steal as well is fantastic. I mean,
it's a long time I saw that, so I don't remember.
I mean, any movie that has Yuen Biu riding a bicycle singing, it is a beautiful day, the sun is shining, it is indeed a good day to practice kung fu on a mountainside.
No Compromise and Crazy Safari, those movies couldn't be further apart. Crazy Safari is a fucked up movie.
Would you call Crazy Safari Bruce exploitation?
Kind of, but I wouldn't say would want to say why, because it would ruin the surprise.
Exactly, that's the problem. It's
But it's great. It's a great choice. They kind of signal that on the poster, because they take like a still a drawn still from the Big Boss and put on the Crazy Safari poster, a very busy poster. If you ever get a chance to see that, Bruce Lee is on that.
Exactly, and that film gave Nick Sale a whole new career in Hong Kong cinema for about 2 years. I mean, it was crazy. He did like 6 movies over the course of a 2 year period. Yeah.
That would be the Bushman for people not knowing Nick Sao is. Bushman from The Gods Must Be Crazy. And all of those Hong Kong movies eventually got to be called The Gods Must Be Crazy all around the world. So
Gods Must Be Crazy. It was Crazy Safari, Crazy Hong Kong, Gods Must Be Crazy in China, etc. Yeah. Which Gods Must Be Crazy in China also offers Cynthia Khan in a leopard skin shirt and shorts combo. So it's one of them.
They got together quite a good cast for it. Crazy Hong Kong, I think, has Lau Ching Wan.
Yeah, Lau Ching Wan and Cecilia Yip. Yeah,
and it's a Sing Sound movie, so it's a crazy amount of effort they put into it. Here we go. The two brothers fighting a little bit. I mean, you can't do a Bruce Lee movie without nunchucks, obviously. So he's Sam is ticking off what needs to be in a Bruce Lee movie, even if it's slightly approaching Bruce exploitation.
And it's lackeys going through tables. Nothing better.
And all of these stuntmen, I guess, were in and around when Bruce Lee was alive as well, and in the movies. Mm-hmm. I've not seen Enter the Dragon in quite a long time, but I guess that's the movie where most of these people were in. Mm-hmm.
Most of them are in Fist of Fury and Enter the Dragon. I mean, because those were the two Bruce Lee movies that featured the most amount of stuntmen. But and you also have to remember, this was only a couple of years after Bruce Lee's death, so the memory was still very strong. And I mean, it's Bruce completely revolutionized the industry. I mean, you have to remember, everyone plays down the Bruce exploitation. Yuen Woo Ping was choreographing Bruce exploitation movies. Yeah. Dynamo, Soul Brothers of Kung Fu with Bruce Lee. That's what Yuen Woo Ping's team. It's,
Tower of Death.
I remember showing Yuen Woo Ping Soul Brothers of Kung Fu, and he was laughing because there was his entire family, pretty much. leaping around, getting beaten up. It's, most of those films, unfortunately, in Hong Kong, have never been seen again. Very few of them got VHS or LD release. Occasionally, they'll start popping up on VCD, but so many of the Bruce Lee and the Bruce Lee movies, nobody's seen them in Hong Kong since they came out.
I'm kind of glad that this production got made. I don't know if it was a tough sell to make a more poignant, sincere, heartfelt, and honorary product rather than cheap exploitation, but I'm kind of glad that this got a chance to be seen.
It's weird because Stephen Chow always wanted to do a young Bruce Lee movie, and I think the problem was everybody assumed he wanted to make a comedy, and when all the investors were willing to give him money, but he actually wanted to make a serious young Bruce Lee movie, and nobody would give him the finance for it. Because I think everyone thought it would be like this, it'd be like Enter the Fat Dragon, it'd be Enter the Young Dragon. And unfortunately, Stephen Chow was like, no, it'll be a serious movie with me as Bruce Lee. And everybody kind of went, and walked away. And now, Stephen Chow's meant to do Tai Chi, which is like a way the dragon goes to America. Mm-hmm. So it could be very interesting, yeah.
Co-starring not Chris Tucker or Tracy Morgan?
No, Jack Black and Anne Hathaway.
Well, at least it's not someone that speaks with a high pitch in his voice, for 90 minutes. Tracy Morgan, Chris Tucker, I'm looking at you.
But if you see Tracy Morgan in a cop-out, he delivers.
I'm looking forward to that, indeed. I think we're slightly approaching a plot in this movie, and it's my... Here's the balanced view of a Hong Kong cinema fan, in my opinion, and I'm not looking down on anyone else. I'm just saying I think it's a way to go. You can look at a movie and criticize it heavily for 30, 40, even 50 minutes out of 90 minutes, and it still will have enough moments to make it a classic. Enter the Fat Dragon is not refined filmmaking with great pace and interest all the time. But it has such strong elements elsewhere, the things we've discussed, Sammo's charm, dopey charm, his infatuation with Bruce Lee, great fight action, and just general fun. And that, wins over all the bad elements, if you will. And Hong Kong movies are classic in that regard. They are uneven as hell. Especially the 70s and 80s stuff, in particular the 80s stuff, all the cheap comedies and the heroic bloodshed movies, and they were they contradicted themselves within the movies because you could have rape, comedy, bloody shootout, even horror elements mixed in together in one movie, and it was still
I remember when I first started watching Hong Kong movies at the cinema in England, you would sometimes just see a poster and have no idea, is this a comedy, is this an action movie? Or you'd be watching a comedy and suddenly there'd be a hardcore 10-minute action sequence. I mean, that was one of the reasons I fell in love with the genre, because it was just, it delivered on everything. You could never tell what was going to be there,
Yeah, exactly. And you can't really do that now. I came up with one example when you were talking about the poster there, of a movie that had a hard time selling itself, and that was actually a Korean movie, Save the Green Planet. And is anyone has ever seen that? It's wacky, it's violent, and it's incredibly touching. Mm-hmm. and you sort of no wonder they didn't know how to sell that, so they just put the lead, the guy from Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, on there being quite wacky and thumbs up and everything's cool, and the movie is so really down. It's a downer.
Oh no, I mean, but that's sometimes the thing is that it's, you know, it's that hard sell of how to get people to come in and see that movie, what elements work.
Unfortunately, in that case, there was barely any watch. Barely any box office, so they failed. They won a few awards, but and acclaim, but it was a flop, unfortunately. But that's nowadays, you know, it's only a few years old, that film.
I mean, that's one of the things where people forget is that the good thing of DVD and Blu-ray and everything is a lot of these movies, they do get a second chance at life, and it's just some movies are just, like we said, are so hard to market theatrically. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's certain films that you just, if you try and explain the plot to someone, they'll just get even more confused. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly on DVD, you know, like movies like Donnie Darko, etc., people can watch them, pick up on certain elements, tell people about them, and it spreads. I mean, it's, yeah, I love seeing stuff at the cinema, and I miss the good old days when I first came to Hong Kong, where everything got cinema release, every single movie. I mean, yeah, being able to see, you know, Hong Kong movies at the box at the cinema every day, and B movies from America and Italy and Europe and the big Hollywood blockbusters. But there were some movies where I was like, man, they didn't work on the big screen, but on DVD or on video, they're a lot more forgiving.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Did you, Stuart, as well as I did, get into Bruce Lee relatively late? Did you see it in your teens, or like early 20s?
I did see it in my teens, and that was really the thing that got me into Hong Kong cinema. Because I knew of the movies, and I knew that, like, there were these really highly regarded films for, like, martial arts and fights, and it was gotten to the point where I had watched a lot of the big American action movies, and they were getting a bit boring, and I just found, like, just one random Bruce Lee movie on sale, like, when you'd buy three VHSs for a certain price. So I pick up two, and I couldn't figure out a third one, and just saw this Bruce Lee movie. I said, right, take that. And then, of course, it became, like, I didn't actively pursue Hong Kong films from then, but probably the next 3 years after that, I would slowly collect the movies wherever I'd go, and if I'd find one of them, I'd buy it.
Mm.
And I must have spent the entire last year trying to look for Game of Death 2. And when even my partner had went down England to visit family, he said, right, when you're down there, any shops, go in, look at DVD, look for the movies, and if you find like that movie, get it from me, I'll give you the money when you get back.
And I'm willing to bet if she had found it, Game of Death 2, it probably would be an AKA for something completely different. You know, it might as well be an end of a Game of Death in actuality, because the AKAs are so different.
But the stupidest thing was, we found it like years later, and it is in the same shop we go into all the time. It had probably been there the entire time. It just, the fuckers had stick the price tag over the number 2. So it just says Game of Death.
I actually had that with Enter the Fat Dragon when I first came to Hong Kong. I used to pass a video shop, and I had Enter the Fat Dragon in the window, and so many times I went in there asking them to sell it to me, and they would always try and sell me porn. You know, they would always offer me pornography, and I'd be like, no, I want Enter the Fat Dragon. No, here, have this. No, I want Enter the Fat Dragon. It's, you know, certain movies slip through the gaps, but yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Tower of Death is actually pretty fun. I prefer it to Tower of Death or Game of Death 2, whatever you want to call it. I prefer it to Game of Death.
Oh yeah,
it's far less annoying to me.
I mean, it's a guy in a lion suit versus cardboard taped to a mirror. It's an easy decision, really.
That was another one of those moments where I actually never.
Roy Horan. I mean, come on.
Yeah, Roy
Horan. Yeah, I'm still in the graveyard. What? Where could you possibly go wrong with dialogue like that? It's, yeah.
You know, Wang Jiangli, for fuck's sake. I mean, versus mostly Yung Biu.
of course, Yung Biu when he was still paying the bills, just as a stuntman. Yeah.
I think the scene with the Westerners here was slightly changed in the English dub. The dialogue inside the restaurant, due to the language that was spoken of English dub, English being one, I think they changed them to be in French or something, so they had to...
Oh, no, No, I mean, it's like Way of the Dragon. I mean, the Chinese print of Way of the Dragon and the English print are so different dialogue-wise because there's, you know, in the original print, they're playing up exactly the language difficulties. So, I mean, that's where I think sometimes people forget when they complain about, oh, this film has been redubbed or it's been readjusted. Sometimes you've got to readjust it for an audience.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is now giving people that option to watch the original version. I'm sorry, but there you go. Li Hai Sheng with an afro, painted black. I'm sorry.
And the great Peter Yang.
And what I love about it is Li Hai Sheng is a very, very regal gentleman when you meet him. He's quite serious and very, yes, making movies. And then I showed him the Fat Dragon and he just laughed like a little kid. And suddenly was willing to talk about the stupidity of it all, yeah. Because we were doing an interview for, like, I think either Hong Kong Legends or Dragon Dynasty, and he was being very, yes, making movies. It's a serious thing. I was like, yeah, but I love you in Enter the Fat Dragon. Look at this. And suddenly it all changed, and he was far more easygoing and fun. So,
yeah. You were like Sammo Hung with the Bruce Lee poster.
But exactly.
Look at this. Smart, eh? and of course Liu Sang, bad guy, Magnificent Butch, 36 mm-hmm. Chamber of Shaolin is in one of the training sequences. It's great and burly looking in Last Hurrah for Chivalry, the John Woo movie. I'd never remembered him being like pumped up and muscular as such, but in Last Hurrah for Chivalry I remember him looking very big.
Oh no, he's always been he's one of those guys who a lot of the time he was just very ripped. Yeah, he's one of them guys that if he's got a jacket or a shirt on, he doesn't look big, but he's very sinewy. In a lot of movies, he's got to be 60 something now, and he still looks very fit and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I mean, yeah, that was the scary thing last week, realizing that Sammo has got to be 62 now. 60, 62. It's, yeah.
Wow.
It's suddenly realizing, you know, because he was fighting and leaping around, and suddenly realizing, hang on a minute, this guy's got to be 60 now. It's, you know.
And people still have the stomach to
in the cleaning, yeah.
And people still have the stomach to complain about, Hong Kong cinema is not what it used to be. No one makes action movies anymore. Nye, 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 nye. You know, Jackie Chan and Sammo has really gone on a downslide. Fuck you, they're older.
No, I think part of the problem is people seem to forget exactly that Enter the Fat Dragon is, you know, 30 odd years ago. It's not, you know, Sammo is not 30 anymore. Of course, he's going to be doubled at certain points. Yeah, and yes, it is frustrating sometimes that there are not as many opportunities for some of the martial arts guys, but it's starting to change again. Look at Fan Siu Wong. For years, Fan Siu Wong was out in the cold, but now he's coming back.
Mm, indeed.
Yeah, and then, sorry, that's the lady in red is Anki Bielki, actress and director, and mother of Anki, also Anki.
The mother is Anki Lau, and the daughter
is Anki Belki, who's in Connected, Vampire Who Admires Me, Confessions of Pain, etc., who's actress and model as well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And her daughter is seriously good looking. The Vampire Who Admires Me is a shit film, but she has a Western look about her. I don't know if her father is.
She's half German.
Right.
She's a Eurasian, father's German. Because she's also done a lot of work in Germany on TV and films. And appeared in German Playboy, but sadly, just in the news section. Yeah.
God damn it. But I remember a great fact you looked up about The Vampire Who Admires Me, Stu, that one of the stuntmen in it to play the vampire has played a vampire on numerous occasions all the way back to the 80s. Basically, your quote, this is Mr. Vampire.
The fucking Vampire King himself.
Yeah. You know, so that's just a delightful fact for me.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. This is one of the classic scenes. I guess it's surely based on a misunderstanding. I think he's trashing Fong Hakon's car, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think, actually, Fong Hakon is actually really good in this film. Like, I think he is one of those really underrated actors. Like, sure, he was great in the Kung Fu films, but when it comes to like more modern cinema...
Yeah. He's also a Herman Yao's boy nowadays. He's in every Herman Yao movie, essentially. Gong Tao and Oriental Black Magic, and now the latest movie I saw him in was The First Seventh Night, and he's an actor in those. He's a old. He looks good still. He's older, but I like seeing a veteran.
And he's also
face.
In Ip Man 2. Wow. He turns up in Ip Man 2. So yeah.
Cool. Is he in Herman Yao's Ip Man movie? Do you know that?
Probably, because 99% of the cast and crew from Ip Man 2 seem to pop up in it. In the Yeah.
That's great.
Although
that makes
the Young Ip Man does feature Andy Sahler from the UK uttering the immortal words, "Your kung fu is most formidable," at one point to somebody. So yeah, it should be fun. It should be a lot of fun.
I'll probably watch the Herman Yao Ip Man before Ip Man or Ip Man 2, just for the sake of it, you know, because I'm a great fan of Herman Yao, and I would love to see him do well.
Yeah. Rocks, okay?
I'm not dissing them, just taking my time.
That movie lives up everything it delivers on.
Mike, you need to kind of really understand this thing about Ken. I've talked about Young and Dangerous films so much to him, he still hasn't gotten to them yet.
I'm going to watch them before the commentary.
He has to watch them, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you know what will happen then? He'll just say, "Stu, I've seen the future and Ekin Chen is the future. I was wrong for all these years."
Yeah, exactly. I like him.
No longer like IFT movies. He'll just be obsessed with Ekin Chen. And he'll be watching I'm Your Birthday Cake and other movies endlessly. It's, yeah.
You know what? I would watch I'm Your Birthday Cake for but for Michael Wong, because Michael Wong is wonderful in that movie. Ah, yeah.
I thought you mean for the other very good reason.
That's even Michael more Wong. I'd watch a movie called I'm Your Birthday Cake for Michael Wong.
Absolutely, that's on air now, and that will be forever cemented in time. He's great in that movie. I don't know how long far into the movie are. I think now sometime there might be a plot about antiques or smuggling or some crap like that. it's not much plot in this movie. But when Peter Yang comes on screen, and I got to talk about him because I quickly become a great fan of Peter Yang, and I'll explain why. The guy with great. Great look there earlier in the scene where Li Huishang entered, one of the bad guys.
Does anyone actually know when Samuel was writing on the back of the car what that stood for?
That I'm afraid not, I haven't had a chance to check. I mean, the problem is sometimes there's certain like Chinese characters or things that if they're painted in a certain colour have very, very strong meanings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's when we do the Young and Dangerous commentary, especially when we discuss some of that, but it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. Roy Chow himself, the man himself, worked with everyone from Bruce Lee to Harrison Ford, yeah.
It's King Hu also, great presence in King Hu's movies. Touch of Zen, Fate of Lee Khan. Well, he was in pretty much every classic aside from Dragon Inn. He was in Valiant once as well, but great, one of those like cinema's great speaking voices. Whenever you get to hear it, his great voice, especially in English, he was very apt at English because he worked as an interpreter in the United States Army before.
Well, no, he loved people's accents. He was very much. He was someone who loved speaking English, and he'd sit down with you and ask about your accent and where you were from, and yeah, you know, he had like a real love for the English language. Yeah, you know, very strong Christian as well. Yeah, you know, very, very righteous fellow. So yeah.
Apparently, he before he passed away in the '90s, he became a Christian during his last years because he survived apparently both a car crash, a plane crash, and several heart attacks. According to the internet, so no wonder, you know, he saw something in that, a sign or two in that.
Now we're introducing Leung Ai Yan's character and the great Chu Chi Ling from Kung Fu Hustle. Yeah.
Who looks the same as well in Kung Fu Hustle. He doesn't look at all different.
Age.
And he's ripped in Kung Fu Hustle as well. He looks good.
And this guy.
David Nick, according to the research I did. Who the hell is? I don't know. No one probably will ever know. But
probably a policeman or something, because back then a lot of the time that's whether it's one of the Westerners, either a businessman or a policeman or some, you know, a friend of a friend. Yeah, I mean, it was before the days of chunking mansions, really. So, yeah, it wasn't. It was also before there was the big influx of Westerners wanting to be in movies. So, it was strange. There were a lot of people who came in and out, did the occasional movie, and everything. And some of those guys, I'd love to sit down and get, you know, their stories, but so many of them just disappeared. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you're kind of blessed that you have guys like Roy Horan who became active as in the likes of Seasonal Corporation, so he was part of creating movies, and therefore he could collect stories and pass them on in his late years as well.
Oh, no, Roy's a great guy. Another guy paid his dues in the industry, gone from being a wild, crazy man to very mellow, very intelligent, very just a superb guy. Teaches at Hong Kong Polytechnic, and of course his daughter now, Selena Jade, from the Wu Jing movie, you know, making her mark as an actress and singer. So yeah.
And here we go in this scene. We have this is Roy Chow, of course, but we have Peter Young looking at the antiques. And since I did the research, I've seen a lot of movies, but three or four movies with Peter Young, and he's became to me one of the great actors in swordplay movies of the late 60s and early 70s. He did a few movies with Joseph Kwo, King of Kings, The Son of Swordsman, and I think Swordsman of All Swordsmen, in particular King of Kings and Swordsman of All Swordsmen. He's a terrific actor. He's got dramatic range, and he also is good in the fight scenes that are way ahead of their time for the late 60s. I don't think anyone outside of Joseph Kwo and King Hu did as well in Taiwan, you know, Wuxia cinema. And Peter Yang is really a memorable presence there. Here he's wacky.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny because it's so many of those movies, unfortunately, in Hong Kong, you know, vanished. You know, like, there's a lot of movies like that, you know, in Hong Kong nobody knows about. That's one of the frustrating things when I first came to Hong Kong, realizing that, like with the Shaw Brothers movies and a lot of the early Golden Hour stuff, so many of those films, you know, that we'd all grown up watching and would watch again and again and again, nobody here had seen for so many years. I mean, I think we talked about it briefly last time, like Alexander Fu Sheng, you know, in Hong Kong, nobody, you know, under a certain age really knows who Alexander Fu Sheng was because those movies, you know, sat in the Shaw Brothers archive for so long. Yeah, it's. And like I said, there's so many actors, you know, who were off in Taiwan or in China or Korea doing stuff. You know, nobody knows their movies. You know, a lot of the movies that Gordon Liu and everybody did outside of Shaw Brothers, very few people in Hong Kong had really seen. It's sometimes a very frustrating part of the way the market's been. Yeah.
Great, great crew Peter Young has assembled behind him. We mentioned a few, but seeing them all gathered up, especially Li Hoi Sang in the black,
yeah,
the black makeup, that's Jim Kelly. I guess this is a slightly better decision in terms of painting someone black than in Don't Give a Damn.
Oh, come on, man. I mean, Don't Give a Damn, another movie completely politically incorrect.
I know, but it didn't really sit well with me, that scene in Don't Give a Damn, to be honest.
The scary thing is, when we were filming that scene, like, I was on the set with Bobby Samuels, who's in the movie, and was, you know, worked for some time. We thought it was incredibly funny, and it was only later on when we saw it at the cinema, we were like, oh, shit. Because on the tape, we thought it was funny. Bobby was teaching Yung Byu and Takeshi Kaneshiro how to walk a certain way, how to talk. And then we all thought it was incredibly funny, and then when we saw the scene, we were like, oh, maybe we're going to take the wrong way. You know?
Jesus Christ. I think in and around this scene at the party here, I think there's elements of Sammo kind of experiencing new things in the world, including liquor, alcohol. And he's not really, he's been closed up, obviously, in his village. And there's, here we go. It's a thing. Eric Tsang has always looked the way he did. And if anyone ever saw that Riley Ip movie, Metade Fumaka, or however you pronounce it.
Oh, excellent.
He flashes back to a time when he was young, when he was a great triad fighter, and playing him is Stephen Fung. But obviously, as it turns out, he's a romanticized version of what he was like when young. And you see that he actually looked that way when he was young, that character in Matada Fumaka. But it's,
but
it's
that,
a great...
that was one of the few things I liked in the terrible Avenging Fist movie was, you know, they have the flashback, and when Samuel was young, he was Ikin Cheng. Yeah, it's like...
Okay, Stu, time to defend the movie.
I'm bottling it in. It's cool. Let's just run with the film. I'll talk to him after the recording.
Avenging Fist, Stu versus Mike Lee, the fight.
I'm just saying that was a great moment, okay?
The damage has been done. Let's just laugh at Lee Hoi-san.
Oh, God, you're not going to do a Mike Banner on me and start rampaging against whatever I've said, yeah.
They're slowly taking the time with the movie, but I think we're approaching a great fantasy scene.
Why so much? Wow! Was that Cupid's arrow?
Oh, and here we go. Wonderful
there
fantasy.
We go, talking of flashbacks. It's, yeah.
This is whacked out. This is Sam Obi.
This is how you met the of your life. I see on your Skype profile you're wearing a similar hat. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah.
Peter Yang was never this broad in his Wuxia movies. Obviously, he was very emotional and very stoic, and this is wonderful to have. Mm-hmm. And I think as the 70s and 80s went on, and even 90s, he got cast as villains more often than not, because he looked like a heavier, you know, a big, an elder boss. He could play that.
And of course, just to quickly say, where is this scene taking place? But at the very location from Bloodsport where Van Damme is doing the splits, overlooking Hong Kong Harbour. It's the peak lookout. Yeah. Another tie-in to Roy Chow.
So. Yeah, exactly. It's in Bloodsport.
It was one of those moments of realising when I came to Hong Kong when realising it's not an incredible temple built on a mountainside. It's a public viewing platform. And all they did was put a black sheet over the map for Jean-Claude to do the splits on. It's, yeah. It looks so great on film, and then it was disappointing to realise it's not a temple, it's just a viewing platform, yeah.
And as wacky as Pete Yang's character is, he's going to go down some very disturbing routes in a little later on in the film when he injects someone else with drugs, but also himself.
It's like fucking romanticized thoughts here.
Take two. That's why Hong Kong Fu is what we love. But you know, even in his fantasy, he trips her over.
You know, yeah. It could be like this is the Leslie Nielsen scene, but parodied from another movie. But this is an original scene from a movie, not parody at all. Look at this guy. He should be a cult hero based on the movies that he's been in. But
and Roy Chow's dialogue, Professor Pai, yeah, why do you feel so happy? I've just given her a lesson.
He looks like he's really turned on by her, but he's more like, that was so
I think he just likes the idea of tripping her up and throwing her in a pool. It's, yeah.
And that has nothing to do with anything, barely anything to do with anything, but I love the fact that it's in the movie, mm-hmm. and it's allowed to be slow motion.
This could have easily been one of those roles that was just handed off to Dean Sheik, and then we would think nothing of it. We would get no credit, but with it being Peter...
Stu, I might have to fight you. Dean Sheik is an underrated genius.
Partly an underrated genius,
but at times he just pisses his pants.
But he does it so well. It's, yeah.
Well, no one, barely anyone pissed their pants in movies. So, I mean, he's quite alone in that regard.
Obviously, you need to watch more Wong Jing movies, sir. That's,
yes, sir. That's, yeah. Hello, I'm Dean Check. I'm pissing my pants.
Same voice for everything.
Well, but speaking of Dean Sheik, did he leave the film industry because of health reasons? I think something happened to him, or am I confusing it with someone else?
I don't know. I mean, after Cinema City closed, he was like in the early 90s, he was still around for a while talking about being a producer, and every so often he seemed to be about to come back into the industry. I don't know, I mean, both him and Karl Macker just kind of like stepped away and, you know, just every so often make an appearance. So it's that strange thing in Hong Kong that certain people in the industry just seem to just disappear. And unfortunately, in too many cases, people make stories up about it and put it on the internet and claim that they're in seclusion or living on a mysterious island in the South China Sea.
So let's make up a new story then, Mike. Let's make up a new story and add to the fire.
Yeah.
Use your fantasy. I mean, it's also this kind of scene, you know, a guy who hasn't drunk liquor before, appears drunk and he's crazy, and what do you do with that concept? And Sammo is doing quite a bit with the concept and showing off his martial arts ability to great effect. And here's an area I can't speak of at all. So, I mean, in terms of what do you think Sammo excelled at in terms of martial arts on screen? People speak of power a lot. What do you guys think?
Oh, I think Sammo came across partially because of his size. You know, when he hits you and you go down, you believe it. You know, a lot of the time, because Sammo really would hit people. Mm-hmm. But also, it just, you know, he has that sense of power. Like, even here, you can see he's playing, but you get the feeling if he really went for it, mm-hmm. you know, blood would be spilt. You know, Jackie still always had that more playful persona. And, you know, if you look, even when Sammo's playing comedy, he can still be vicious.
And that still counts for today. Like, just recently rewatching SPL, like, him and Donnie were still, like, that was convincing, like, between them going at it.
Ip Man 2 as well. I mean, Ip Man, the fight with Donnie is very good. Fight with Darren Shalabi is incredible. And Sammo can still take a knocking and keep on rocking. I mean, Sammo's not from the school of, okay, I'm going to hit you, now let's bring in a stuntman to do my reaction shot. Sammo, you know, will take his knocks if he has to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In terms of him being a kicker, is that an underrated aspect of his, despite his size?
I don't think he was ever the most stylish of kickers, but he certainly had the power and the snap to it. I mean, the funny thing is to me, like, if you look at, say, John Leal, you know, from Secret Rivals, John Leal was incredibly flexible, but I never thought he had the most sharp looking kicks. Whereas if you look at, say, Tan Tao Liang always had like the snap to them. So, yeah.
This is great. Great bit of, I don't know, Jackie style juggling with props, if you will, when he starts juggling with his shoes. Speaking, guys, of like stories on the internet and shit like that. Is there any truth, you know, to the fact that when Sammo made Millionaire's Express, he was jealous of Jackie in any regard because Jackie made big movies or made bigger movies than him? Is there any truth to all any rivalry between them?
Easiest thing you've got to look at is, from talking to Yun Wao, and I've worked with him a lot and other people, is they were a family. They all grew up together, and Sammo was the first to break out. And, you know, Sammo's always been the big brother. So there were perhaps times when he felt, well, I was the first, I was the big brother, I brought everyone in.
This is the best moment here, though. No, man, it's hot dog.
It's hot. I think the problem was, I mean, especially at that time, there was a lot of, you know, like Golden Harvest then were very much, Jackie was only making movies for Golden Harvest. Sammo was making movies between, you know, Golden Harvest, D&B films, Gumbo films, Bojan. You know, Sammo was working all over the place, and I think occasionally there was some politics at Golden Harvest, perhaps, where, you know, Jackie was regarded as the golden boy, you know, and Sammo wasn't. But it's like, you know, I think Yun Wah summed it up. They're a family. Occasionally families have arguments. Mm. So, yeah.
And it's that kind of fact that gets blown up and mistreated and jumbled about on the internet.
One example is, okay, on Ip Man 2, somebody posted a story about Darren Shalabi punching Sammo and knocking him down, when, as if, you know, Darren had no control, as if Darren was a bad guy, as if Sammo got badly hurt. When the truth of the matter is, they were doing a close-up shot where Darren had to hit Sammo for the shot, Sammo was asking him to hit him. Sammo slipped as he was coming off the ropes and bumped into Darren's fist and went down for all of about 0.2 of a second, at which point Darren helped him up, Sammo gave him a hug, told him it wasn't his fault, and they carried on filming. But instead, somebody puts on the internet, oh no, yeah, poor old Darren, he knocked down Sammo, blah, 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 and tries to build it into something bad. It's, you know.
I was quite pleased with that post I put up, Mike.
Well, I wasn't going to name your name.
But I do love these little throwaway gags in this film, like with the sugar.
Yeah.
Sam will put in sugar in his pal's drink, and then his pal continues to put sugar in for his own drink. it's great reactions.
It's a very obscure reference I'm going to make here, but the guy on the right, the kind of worn little guy, actor apparently called Ao Chu Cham, and I've only seen him in one thing, but he really impressed me. There was a TV series called Below the Lion Rock, as Mike surely knows and a lot of listeners surely know.
Classic RTHK. Everybody worked on that.
And the Alan Fong directed New Life stars Ao Chu Cham, the guy we saw in the previous scene, and he's really good. He plays a ex-con drug addict. He's in the scene here as well. pick that up on DVD, Below the Lion Rock, the Alan Fong disc set. Here we go. This is the greatest scene in the movie for me. This is the statement.
Tony Leung, Leung Siu-hong, brother of Bruce Liang, playing the Bruce Lee impersonator.
Leung Siu-hong is a greatly underrated action director.
With a very Robert Klaus-looking white guy sitting next to him.
Tony Leung is greatly an underappreciated action director and director as well, and primarily Vendetta, the horror movie Vendetta with Ray Loy.
That's a classic little movie. I mean, Tony Leung is another guy, Zali, who's done so much and never really got the credit for it. I mean, he was the assistant choreographer for Ip Man. He choreographed all the action for the Young Ip Man movie. He's done so much stuff all over the place. I mean, he's worked as a director in, like, America, in Russia. He's just on a TV show in Russia. He's fantastic, yeah.
And it's not subtle in this scene, and it shouldn't be. This is the statement of the film, the statement of Samos, because I'm sure he didn't quite like...
He doesn't seem like Bruce Lee.
Just put the glasses on him and give him that tracksuit, then you're home free. And I'm sure Sam actually took a hit for this scene. Wouldn't be surprised. But it even tracks forward this scene to a movie we discussed on Podcast on Fire, Finishing the Game, which has this point of, you know, it takes a lot more to make a Bruce Lee copy, but they go the lazy route. You remember, Stu,
I just love that moment where, you know, Sam was getting the slap and is actually pulling the Bruce Lee face.
Yeah. He's basically hulking up.
Exactly.
But basically, Finishing the Game is a flawed mockumentary, but it has some great points about the cheapness of creating Bruce Lee copies. Was it Bruce Lowe? What the hell was his name in that movie? Anyway, Bruce Lowe or something like that.
Breeze Lowe. Mm-hmm. I wear a blue and white tracksuit and I'm called Breeze Lowe.
He's like, they're completely different cats.
And we're in completely different movies as well. Fist of Führer.
Exactly. I mean, the funny thing I always love is some of the movies that got retitled for the West, that, you know, in Hong Kong, nobody even knew they were being marketed as a Bruceploitation or as a Ninjasploitation or something, you know. Yeah. If you ever watched The Real Bruce Lee by Seraphim Karaflexis, you know, which is just... insanity with, like, old, you know, Japanese movies clips used to claim this is footage of Bruce Lee's ancestors, and, you know, footage from Bruce Lee's, you know, childhood movies just redubbed with bizarre dialogue.
But apparently it was that easy to make a cheap Bruceploitation product. They used a lot of the, like, press conference footage from, I guess, Fist of Unicorn with Bruce Lee.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's what's so crazy. That footage... And unfortunately, Bruce Lee's funeral footage seemed to turn up everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean...
And they make a plot point out of that.
I was very confused by the whole Fist of Unicorn thing. There was always the thing that Bruce didn't realize just how much stuff was being filmed.
Yeah.
But then again, it's like, you know, the everyone's probably seen that footage from 36 Crazy Fist. There's Lam Ching Ying, sorry. you know, there's a clip from the making of 36 Crazy Fist where you see Jackie choreographing everybody against the red background. And Jackie came in for one day, and that's all he did. He choreographed the opening sequence against the red backdrop. And it's filmed and released as a special gift for fans of Jackie Chan around the world. Yeah, and then the movie was marketed as choreographed by Jackie Chan, or by certain people, directed by Jackie Chan. Yeah,
of course.
It's,
when all honesty, the credit should have been arranged by Jackie Chan.
And sadly, it would have been against the red background arranged by Jackie Chan, everything else by Tony Leung and Lau Gaoyong. It's,
and these people fucked over Jackie Chan. And these are the names of the people.
I mean, that's the thing. It's just sometimes footage used to get used. I mean, and you know, it would turn up everywhere. And even to this day, there's some films, there's rights issues because nobody's sure who owns the copyright. Mm-hmm. And there's all these grey areas. So it's sometimes very frustrating that some footage just, you know, nobody's sure who officially owns it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because so many Hong Kong movies were made by companies that were formed for one movie, you know, and then that company would disappear. So there's all these, like, you know, films that maybe three or four companies claim ownership for, or nobody's really sure. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, other films that were never shown in Hong Kong, or the prints got lost, or, you know, there's so many grey areas. It's, you know.
I agree, Stu. I like Fung Hak on this film. It's a bit more sneaky rather than full-on, hands-on, fighting rapists that he usually can't say. It's a kind of...
He's being kind. He's offering to help serve his own food.
Here comes the drugs.
A little touch of sugar.
Yeah.
But sometimes that roasted goose is a little bit bare.
Exactly.
He's, as one of you mentioned, he's an underrated actor and director. One of the movies I remember he really did well on was Edge of Darkness. Again, obscure references, but the Yon Shum Shin Siu Ho thriller, action thriller, really good. Alex Mann is in that.
Oh, that should be a podcast on fire all about him. Mm-hmm. The man Absolutely. Could have been king. Yeah.
What's Shin Siu Ho doing? Do you know that right now?
He was doing really bad TV movies for a while, including, like, Royal Sperm, which is a... The Chinese title is meant to be, like, Royal Blood, like the Bloodline, and the English title is Royal Sperm.
Sweet.
Trying to tell the producers that might not be the name to market it with. he looks pretty reasonable. I mean, the last time I saw him was... I shot the interview with him for Tai Chi Master, mm-hmm. for the Dragon Dynasty release, and I think he was just doing TV. Easy, I've been doing a lot of TV in China and everything. So,
I think it's just
another guys who just disappeared. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. He also had a wee bit part in Battle of Wits. I think he played one of the soldiers in that.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. I think thing is now,
it is one of those surprising
it's that
roles.
Case where some of the stunt guys and people who grew up working for him are starting to be, like, you know, directors themselves and bring in people back. Mm-hmm. And some of these guys now have grown into their looks. They've become accomplished, you know, supporting actors or character actors. Whereas perhaps as like the leading man, they couldn't deliver apart from on the action. So, yeah.
I can agree with that because if you look at movies like, it's only one example, but The Pie Dog, the Derek Kwok movie, and he brought in, I mean, a face like Billy Lau, you don't cast in movies nowadays, even though it was a small role. But it's these kind of people that grew up with them and have a fondness of them, and they're. They are available, some of them, and they can put them in movies. And I kind of like that. It's heartwarming.
I think that's it. That it's now you've got an industry where people are starting to realize they can resurrect people's careers. They can start putting people in. You know, like, look at Fan Siu Wong. For so long, you could not literally get Fan Siu Wong arrested for anything. But slowly, people have started to realize he can deliver as an actor. He can deliver action-wise. And now... He's getting stronger roles in every project, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. And again, speaking of Derek Kwok, I mean, he gave Fan Siu Wong a chance in a dramatic role. He played a bum in The Moss, and did quite well.
I love that movie. I mean, the world's deadliest assassin happens to be a beggar. Yeah. I mean, that's such a great idea.
I want to single out the moment here when Samuel snaps into Bruce mode again, and they have to stop him. A millisecond and he's off.
Listen to Uncle Hung.
Oh, it's just great.
The whole thing of realizing they just, you know, Anki Lau just let two guys take their friend to the hospital.
Those men are genuinely concerned.
Yeah.
Post haste.
They have nice jeans on.
And we're driving a very nice Ford Cortina. So it's,
As it
all comes to place,
And this comes up to, like, my favourite gag in the movie when they get the taxi.
I remember this. I'm going to watch this.
Samuel just...
If all else fails, bring in a banana peel. But don't stop there.
It works. It still works.
He catches up.
Where have you been?
I mean, just that. Right here. Running.
Don't you agree? Yes.
Oh my god. I mean, it's what you do with old gags, you know, recognizable gags. It's what you do with it. It's like every other cliche. It's how you perform within a cliche. And this is... I've forgotten about this. Oh, dear lord. Oh, here we go. And it doesn't end, as I said, with the banana peel and the tripping cut to another scene. You know, it goes on, extends. It's the genius of comedy, you know. Repeating yourself once is good in itself, but repeating yourself 2, 3, or 4 times is genius. Mm-hmm. It's robust. How can he do such filthy thing?
This is the only thing about this scene that doesn't work is when it goes to the next scene. This scene would have worked perfectly earlier in the movie, like when they had that party and Samuel was drunk and he lost to those guys. This should have been the one where he had the cycle all the way there and he was too weak to fight the three guys, but when he gets there, he's fine. He's energized. He's ready to fight. That was the only thing that couldn't, like, clued up. I would expect him to come into this scene here, just sweating, covered in dirt. And he's like, you expect me to fight?
You can also see this where Samo began to lay that very important foundation of all Hong Kong movies of the 1980s. A warehouse finale with lots of boxes.
Empty boxes.
Stolen from Starsky and Hutch and Mannix, but, you know, you got to have a warehouse. You got to have plenty of boxes for people to fall into or to burst out from.
That is a groovy outfit for Leo Isang that we passed there. That is excellent. Wonder if you can even fight in those pants. I didn't grow up in the 70s, so I don't know. Don't know how flexible those pants were. I think we're coming up to the what is disturbing at the beginning, but turns out to be all Peter Yang-esque, wacky, and that's the drug injection scene, I think. But it ends with him injecting himself as well. I mean, wow. It's a shame Roy Chow is, you know, as great as he is, this is not the movie where you get, like, the utmost out of Roy Chow. But then again, he has so many other great moments in movies as well. I will always quote Cageman and Summer Snow as great latter-day performances.
Cageman as well for, what's his name, for Victor, the American-Chinese, Victor Wong from Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes.
Also gives an incredible role in that. Yeah, gets incredible performance.
I think it's Teddy Robin Kwan is in it. Liu Kaichi won an award for it, and the guy who was in SPL, Liu Kaichi, he's in a lot of. He's a great veteran actor as well.
I know Liu Kaichi is incredible because he can do so well, and then you'll see him in a movie like Dragon Squad, where he's just badly eating the scenery and being insanely stupid.
He was in Beast Stalker as well, alongside Nick Tse. If you ever saw that, Stu.
I've got on the rental list. I'm actually quite looking forward to it.
One day
Very
award.
Good movie, sir. Very good movie.
Here we go. This is just wrong. This is. It wasn't drug injection. I think it was this, yeah.
It's like the chloroform.
Be patient.
Deep breath, deep breath. And his eyes getting a little bit.
If they had the Hong Kong film running at this time.
I'm slowly realizing it.
Oh my god. He's a genius.
See, this is what's wrong with modern day cinema.
Colin, check this out. I've forgotten the details about the scene. I was completely wrong. He inadvertently drugs himself.
Which is what makes it work even better, because he's incompetent. He's keeping up to be a good villain. Yeah.
They were looking at
the girl, and then he manages to drug himself purely by accident.
And they were looking at themselves, basically. Oh, not again.
That could have been almost a suicide dive.
Speaking a little bit about
the and just decides to leap over the edge of a bridge. Yeah.
Samo, an underrated aspect of Samos is actually Samo the stuntman. Come on, a long hurry. And because
for the entire journey, his friend only looked back once, and that was when the traffic lights it.
In a box, you go.
Girl in the box, can't get them anymore. It's
He's out. He's gone. It's pretty useless main villain. What is your favorite aspect of the finale? Basically, the biggest fight choreography of the film takes place during the finale. So, any moments you want to single out during the finale?
Anything with Li Haisheng is funny, and the entire speech about having that he doesn't really want to fight Leng Gaiyan unless he has to. Mm-hmm. So send the other guys out first. Yeah.
Well, because I don't think we actually get a subtitle for it, but on the dub, is it not something like, "You're Chinese," and it's like, "If you stay, I'll have to dispense you later."
Yeah, exactly. You're very right. I made that note. And
I personally incorrect. I mean,
here we go. I personally like
who wants to fight and why.
Okay. That would be a the previous shot where they went around the corner. It would be a great gag if you just heard like fighting sounds on the soundtrack, and then Sam coming out. But the fight with Leng Gaiyan is my favorite. It's just incredible amount of moves and detailed moves.
And it's sort of Leng Gaiyan's shirt. I mean, it's just he's got that pirate shirt on. He's like,
It really does look like the rejects from the village people.
Exactly.
They didn't quite make the cut, the tribute band.
And then suddenly, Sam are working out how to even the odds. Yeah.
And it's not extended for the sake of being extended, this finale. I think it's very appropriate that it has a trio of fighters and it doesn't run too long. I mean, the likes of Young Master could be argued to run too long.
That's the line there.
Exactly, you're very right. You're Chinese. If you stay, I'll have to dispense of you too. You're very right. Fuck, does he look great?
This is the bit that crosses the line. Especially that the other guy's like, "You're right." I just
okay.
It's like, what is more worrying? Is Samo making a judgment about white guys or Asian guys?
Oh, here we go. What? Jesus Christ.
See, if you notice, Li Haisheng now has the much baggier pants.
There you go.
Ah.
Flair.
Yeah. It's Leng Gaiyan. Is it too simplified or too generalized to say that he was good at mimicking movement, or did he actually have some kind of training? Does anyone know that?
He always says he hasn't really had extensive training. I mean, he's in True Legend and we chatted about it on the set, and he just said, that he was just naturally physical and just had, he was able to pick up choreography and pick up basics. I think nowadays he's got enough background that he can play around with some stuff and make himself look pretty good, but I think he just had that right mind sense for film fighting. Fighting for film is very much, it's a style of its own, and not everyone can adapt to it. I mean, sometimes you'll see people are real life world champions, but they just can't get the hang of adapting it for a film, breaking the rhythm, changing the style. So
and our Chuck Norris moment.
Yeah.
And it's not lazy either. It's wonderful to have the flashbacks to those moments we are referencing. I think Sammo, again, he's the best Bruce Lee impersonator, and he's the only one who made this sincere and heartfelt, in honor of his great friend.
Exactly. That's, I think his was very much making fun while paying homage, respectfully.
I'm kind of surprised but maybe there's a logical answer to this, that this wasn't a Golden Harvest production.
Mm-hmm. I think it was just, at the time Golden Harvest were going to unveil the official Game of Death, the official mm-hmm. Bruce Lee movie. So I think they were kind of like downplaying the whole Bruceploitation thing. Oh. Yeah.
Good on
that. But I mean, to me, as much as I love the Lung Gai Yen fight, the only thing that can make it better would be if Lung Gai Yen just left during this. Yeah. It's like, actually, yeah, you're right. I'm Chinese, you're Chinese, we shouldn't fight. I just walked away. Yeah.
See? He managed to choreograph some power out of this guy, David Nick.
I mean, that's right. He comes across like he's got some background, like boxing or something. It's, yeah.
And of course, I guess somewhere in this, we've already passed it, is sort of reference to the Muhammad Ali style footwork that, of course, Bruce Lee incorporated into his fighting every now and again.
See, I think that guy misread the signals there. I didn't ask for that, man.
Like, he now gets out the mouth guard. Yeah, it's so serious a fight, I'm going to take off my shirt and put it in my mouth guard, yeah. And, you know, Li Haisheng is still there lying there, yeah.
It's a good gig. It's not high def this either, so we can't see him breathing or not. And it's never going to be high def, because... Yeah,
owned by Warner Brothers nowadays, sitting in their vault, never to be released, most probably.
This is?
Yep. One of the many movies that Warner Brothers bought, that's, you know, including Pettycat Driver, that just sits in their vault, which they seem reluctant to do anything with, which is really annoying. Yeah.
There's no point.
They refuse to do anything about Pan Media or anything, just releasing endless bootlegs of half those movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Including this one, unfortunately. But it brings me to a point that it's a shame that stuff is in the vault, but fans of Hong Kong cinema still, they are not realizing that some things are the ultimate editions and were ultimate editions on Laserdiscs, because it's never going to be better.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. There's some films that the VHS, even, or Laserdisc, were exactly. I mean, one of the best VHS I have in my collection is the gold-plated God of Gamblers. When God of Gamblers came out on VHS in Hong Kong, they released it as a special limited edition gold-painted VHS box set. You know, and it had like some additional stuff, like some interviews and things. Yeah. And it's just, like I said, you know, a lot of these companies have disappeared. A lot of original elements have vanished. You know, and sometimes it is a rights issue, because sometimes people won't let you put everything you want on the DVD. Yeah.
There's a good example of Master of the Flying Guillotine. It was released a few times, but the band whose music is in the opening credits of Master of the Flying Guillotine, I think it's a German band or something like that, they found out about this and they said, no, we're not going to allow it anymore. So movies like the Australian release has different music for Master of the Flying Guillotine.
Exactly. That's... I mean, Jiao Yun-fat's Full Contact, directed by Ringo Lam, the reason it was released in England initially was because Vinyl Solutions, which was a record company, were going to sue the producers for using their music. And then they did a rights deal out of it, which later became Made in Hong Kong and everything. But yeah, at one point, that was the original reason. They were just upset that their music was being used without clearance.
Yeah, it's a lot of their tunes.
Films, even... I mean, Stuart would probably know the show Grange Hill and everything, British TV show. When they've re-released it on DVD, they've had to change music because of rights issues. Yeah, it's just, you know, you're going to release a movie and I suddenly tell you, well, you've got to pay an additional $5,000 US for using a song for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for Full Contact, they used like 3 or 4 songs from the band Extreme and a particular album from them. I was a fan of them at the time, of that album. I was like, cool. They playing Get the Funk Out during the opening credits.
With Bridgewater doing her dance.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah.
She's a lawyer nowadays. Gave up on the film business and became a lawyer.
Shame on her. But Anne Bridgewater was kind of cool. I liked her. She was good in Operation Pink Squad. She and her double, but she was... I liked
and
her.
She kills Jeff Falcon with a hairdryer. I mean, that's a way to go. I mean, she was another girl who just unfortunately for so long seemed to be an actress in search of a role. You know, like, they never really knew what to do with her. It's you know, she was one of the, like, you know, the four little girls that Cinema City were promoting, you know, her, Yunke Ying, Lalena Lee, and the other girl's name. Wow. But just, you know, found it hard to do the transition. Yeah.
Look at this. This is amazing exchange. Especially Samus' bit of a handstand that he did. Mm-hmm. Oh, look.
Oh, no, exactly. And then now, out come the weapons. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had something in the boxes.
So I think that's
exactly.
Really...
Exactly. Actually, a...
Really one underrated.
Yeah.
I think Lauren Carrion is also one of those really underrated actors who we'll probably never see really out of, like, outside of Kung Fu films.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
Watch Bogus Cops, his very strange comedy.
Yeah, he directed that.
He has done some very, very interesting movies. I mean, Profile and Ninja.
Legend of the Dragon was a good one.
Oh, where, classically, now you got this white dragon.
Looked completely different.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, you know, what is the basic plot of Legend of the Dragon? It's Way of the Dragon, but with, you know, Jimmy White replacing Chuck Norris. You know, a snooker being used as a substitute for Kung Fu. Yeah.
It's one of my favorite Steven Chow movies, that Legend
exactly,
of the Dragon.
Yeah, any movie that has Yuen Hua playing basically Yuen Hua.
Yeah.
It's great fun.
But you're very right. He looks different, not older in those 90s movies. And the beard certainly does something. But it's like, oh, holy shit, that's Leung Gaiyang. In like Lost Here in China.
Like, that cunt's got a chin under that beard.
It's his head shaved or it's grey hair that you really think, oh, he's gotten older. It's, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's strange how some people in Hong Kong and everything just haven't aged. There's certain actors and actresses I know that I'm like, but you've got to be of a certain age now and you still look so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then even it's the final exchange, yeah.
There's no, it's like when we talked about mismatched couples, there's no huge amount of danger or bloodshed in this film. It's one of those that keeps it, its body count is very, very low, if even one.
See, Mismatched Couples, most of the bloodshed came during the making of the film.
I guess so. And I like any movie that is sort of balanced in that regard. It's not, it's light and, you know, if you look at movies like Carry On Pickpocket, it's light and dense turns highly gory and lethal towards the end.
Yeah, well, that Frankie Chan was the master of that. If you ever watched The Good, The Bad, and The Beauty, I mean, that's the most politically incorrect movie of all time, with so much blood and guts, and it's just utterly insane. Yeah,
Quick summary of your thoughts on this movie. Now that we've lifted its status up a little bit more by doing a commentary on it. So, Stuart,
still a very underrated movie. Still incredibly good fun, and it's just great. I mean, come on, it's, yeah, it lives up and delivers on exactly what you expect from a movie called Enter the Fat Dragon.
Mm-hmm. Sammo is always remembered for his old school kung fu films, but even like these modern day, well, set at a modern time kung fu films are also great. Because yeah, everyone could mention The Magnificent Butcher, but come on. Enter the Fat Dragon's up there with them.
Yeah, so that's a good way to summarize it. And I guess we're coming to a close because there's no end credits.